It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. A first-term Republican congresswoman said President Trump has no future in the GOP. What is the party going to look like after Inauguration Day? Coming up, a look at the future of the Republican Party. First, propelled by last week's siege of the Capitol, social media companies made moves to suspend and ban any posting or usage of their platforms by President Trump. Twitter placed a permanent ban on the president last Friday. Facebook and Instagram, also owned by Facebook, have banned him indefinitely, at least through the inauguration. Snapchat permanently disabled his account. YouTube has suspended his channel for a week and gave him his first strike. Reddit has banned a collection of pro-Trump pages prone to violent threats and misinformation in the past, and banned a new subreddit last week. And Parler, a social media site used by extremists, often pro-Trump supporters, was effectively shut down as well when Amazon cut off its web infrastructure services. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you think these social media companies were right to ban or suspend the president? Do you think they should have taken some of those measures earlier? Or do you think it's going too far? Do you worry about what it could mean for how everybody else communicates in the future? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@wpr.org. Steve Knoll is a marketing professor and social media expert at Madison College. Steve, welcome back to Central Time.
Great. Thanks for having me, Rob.
Well, a lot of these dominoes fell in a pretty short period of time. What do you make of the sequence of events? Who made the first moves here? What drove them to make these decisions?
Well, it seems like it happened really, really fast. But really, this is kind of a culmination of what's been building up actually for several years now. And I think the actions at the Capitol last week were really kind of the proverbial straw that broke the camel's back for a lot of media companies that really realized just how, you know, their tools were being abused by a lot of influential people.
Yeah, we saw Jack Dorsey, head of Twitter, commenting, saying he thinks it was the right decision. At the same time, he worries about what it says about how much power that people like him and other social media company owners and leaders have over our communication. Even some of the people who made this decision see a double-edged sword here.
Well, they have. And the interesting thing, you know, you have to remember, social media is still a relatively new medium. You know, it's been active, obviously, for probably 15 years. But, you know, in the grand scheme of things, that's not a long time for a medium to really mature and kind of develop, you know, best practices. So it's a lot of learning by doing. But in a lot of ways, it's also kind of the wild west of technology. So, you know, I think a lot of these companies are finding themselves, you know, all of a sudden being thrust upon with a lot of really large implications and trying to make decisions where there really isn't any precedent to look back on.
Now, these are not, some people have pointed to the First Amendment. These are not First Amendment decisions. They're not, you know, these are private companies. It's just like a grocery store kicking me out if I raise too much of a ruckus, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, these are private companies that have become really essential parts of the way we communicate with each other. I don't know. What would you like to see from companies to lay out how they're going to handle that grocery store angry customer equivalent on their websites?
Well, just because these companies have become very, very popular doesn't mean that the users have the right to use them as they want. And I think that that's really kind of at the root of that, is that a lot of people have gotten used to using these companies like Facebook and Twitter and almost feel like they're their companies and not that they're a patron to the company. And I think a lot of people really need to kind of step back and really think that if you can't live your life without Twitter, you've probably got some other issues that you need to address first. And certainly in terms of social media, there's plenty of opportunities to go other places. You know, if you don't like Twitter, there's Facebook. If you don't like Facebook, you know, there's other social mediums. There's Snapchat. It's not like one has a monopoly on communication. And yeah, some of them are pretty big and influential. And if you get kicked off Twitter, it's pretty significant. But there are other grocery stores you can go shop at. It may just not be the one that you like, but they kicked you out for a reason, and it's your responsibility, not Twitter's.
Now, this question of, in effect, content moderation, it's been around for a long time, since early BBS and message boards to comment sections for newspapers. What do you think social media companies need to do to lay out their terms of service clearly so that their customers, whether it's a president or just some dude, knows what they can and can't do, what puts them at risk of getting kicked off?
Well, first of all, you know, as I said, you have to acknowledge that the fault here is at the user and not the company, okay? But at the same point, too, the companies have made it really easy for users to kind of not know the rules. I mean, when you sign up for a Twitter or a Facebook account, there's a term of agreement that you have to agree to. But if you actually go in and read those terms, these are incredibly long legalese documents that are probably written with the intention to get you to not read them. They kind of just want you to scroll through, click yes, and move on. So one of the things that I really think that these companies should really revisit is kind of establishing almost like a simplified terms of agreement that basically clearly lays out what people are agreeing to when they sign up for, you know, for example, a Twitter account. So I think part of that is, you know, the social media companies have kind of enabled this type of, you know, entitlement by their users, and it's kind of their own fault. And unfortunately, they've been kind of naive. Facebook especially has said, you know, for years, you know, we believe that people will always try to, you know, do the right thing. And they've always kind of taken a hands-off approach. Well, in the last couple of years, they've seen more and more examples of people not doing that. And I think these companies have been very naive. And I think especially last week was a real wake-up call for a lot of the tech companies.
Naive, or I've heard accusations, Steve, that you know, they want to keep all these customers on the angry statements on there. They get attention. They keep people scrolling and using and posting. Maybe not so much naive as, hey, maybe it's in our self-interest to keep this angry stuff coming through.
Well, I'm not going to disagree with you. I mean, even going back to the grocery store example, you know, just because you have an angry customer and you ask them to leave, you know, every business is probably going, yep, but we want you to come back tomorrow. Just don't be so angry. So, you know, I think that's the nature of business is you never want to alienate customers. And I think that that's what the social media company, they were really kind of, you know, put into a hard position where on one hand, you had people that were definitely breaking their terms, that were definitely using illegal speech, not free speech, definitely, you know, saying things that are blatantly illegal, like inciting violence and all that stuff. But at the same point, too, you didn't want to lose them. So, you know, how far, you know, when that proverbial customer in the grocery store starts raising their voice, at what point do you ask them to leave? And I think any manager that's ever had to deal with an irate customer has asked themselves the same question. At what point do you draw the line? And again, in the social media world, this is relatively new, and there really are not a lot of guidebooks these companies can look to say, okay, when people get to this point, that's when you kick them off. They literally are figuring out the rules as we go along.
Talking to Steve Knoll, marketing professor and social media expert at Madison College, talking about President Trump's ban on Twitter and many other social media sites, and what social media sites do when it comes to behavior on their sites when they ban people. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Now, the president, this is yesterday, he had made a call in a statement against violence over the next week or so. He also mentioned this issue. Here's a listen.
I also want to say a few words about the unprecedented assault on free speech we have seen in recent days. These are tense and difficult times. The efforts to censor, cancel, and blacklist our fellow citizens are wrong and they are dangerous.
So what do you think of the president's comments? I think clearly related to the social media issue there.
I think he needs to go back to second grade and take a basic civics class, because that is, you need to understand what free speech means. And what he was saying last week and what he's been saying is not the definition of free speech. It is definitely insightful rhetoric, and that is absolutely not protected by the First Amendment. So what he said was not true. It was a blatant lie. But again, he's now in panic mode, scrambling, because, you know, I don't think he intended it to go this far. And unfortunately, he now has to live with the repercussions of kind of what he did to himself.
Let's bring a caller on now. Lisa is with us in Chicago. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What did you want to bring up, Lisa?
I wanted to bring up that, number one, we need to respect our president. That's a first and foremost, and he still is our president. Going back to, you know, the impeachment, that is in process, but it hasn't been finalized, and they're still investigating everything, and they're quickly jumping to a lot of conclusions before even making a decision. So that's going to play out, whether it's a day before what they're talking about. So we don't know the outcome of that. So everyone is talking about he's impeached. Yes, the process is going on. We know that.
But to social media, Lisa?
Yes, we're talking about the social media. I believe that if they can ban the president from social media, we have some serious problems, because that is freedom of speech. And the problem is, they're not, with social media, they don't have rules across the board. So
Lisa, I gotcha. Thanks a lot for the call. Technically, the president has been impeached. That's the House part. He's not been convicted. That's the Senate bit still coming. Lisa saying she doesn't like this decision, though, Steve, getting back to social media, and says they don't have clear and consistent rules, social media sites.
Well, this is a good example of people really not understanding the facts. And the fact is, the president was not banned from social media. He was banned from Twitter and Facebook. Okay, he has the right to go out and start his own social media network. Anyone does. So this blanket statement that he's been banned from social media is patently false. That is not true at all. And again, I really think that people really need to sit back and really understand what is social media, what is free speech, how all this works, how government and laws work, before they start, you know, spreading this information and basically spreading fake news.
Thanks for the call. We're talking to Steve Knoll from Madison College about social media companies, many of them choosing to ban or temporarily suspend President Trump's accounts. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think of the decision from Twitter and Facebook and others? Do you want to see social media platforms do this sort of thing more often, especially when it comes to inflammatory or maybe inciting comments on social media? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We pick up our conversation now with Steve Knoll from Madison College, social media expert there, talking about the surge in social media companies banning or suspending the president and how they handle terms of service, who gets banned and when. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Let's go back to your calls now. Chuck is with us in Waukesha. Chuck, hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I would just like to say that, first, I believe Twitter is a publicly traded company. It is not a government entity. It is not a recognized press, such as Associated Press or newspapers and radio. And I feel that they had every right to ban anything that is detrimental or dangerous to the public. Just because it's an opinion doesn't mean it's free speech. If I were to walk into a theater or a crowded venue and yell fire, which is a very old sentiment, I guess, or a story comparing this, I could be jailed for inciting a riot and causing bodily harm. president did for 4 years on Twitter was drop those nice little nuggets trying to create havoc. So I believe they have every right to. It's not free speech.
Chuck, thanks for the call. Steve?
Absolutely right. That he is completely accurate in everything that he said there. You know, just because, you know, there's a medium out there. And again, the whole yelling fire in the movie theater. Yes, that is probably the most well-known way to describe this scenario and what is and isn't free speech. And again, you know, Twitter is not the government. And the First Amendment is a direct reference to government speech. So Twitter being a private company, it is no different than, you know, you go into a restaurant and they have a sign that says no profanity allowed. And then you go into the restaurant, you swear, they kick you out. Same thing. The businesses have a right to set the rules and users need to follow the rules.
Thanks for the call. We'll go to Susan now in Elkhart Lake. Susan, hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Two things. I thought of something after listening to the prior guest. One, Trump has a megaphone in the White House press. So if he wants to get his voice out there, that's one of the biggest megaphones that he could use. But he's choosing right now and has for a while to not use it. So that's kind of, I think, telling. And then the other question I have is there's other media sites that some of these more extreme people are going to, such as gab.com, and how, explain something about those sites and how they continue to operate. Why are they continuing to operate? Gab's been involved in some other extremist behaviors in the past. So I'm trying to understand that. How are they different than Twitter or Facebook or any of those other kinds of things?
Susan, thanks for the call. Steve, thoughts on social media sites that cater to a more conservative crowd or in some cases a more extremist crowd?
Well, again, we saw this with Parler last weekend when, you know, they were initially, the apps were taken down and then they actually lost their hosting service. Yes, you're right. Gab is kind of the other one that's still out there that's known. So there are a lot of smaller, more niche ones, but there really isn't one that has the reach anymore. I certainly think that Gab is being pushed now into the spotlight. And I think some of their business partners are going to start to take a look at what they do and then kind of decide, hey, do we really want to be associated with this type of product? You know, that's what Amazon did last weekend when they pulled Parler down. Amazon was hosting Parler's web service. And Amazon took a close look at what they were doing and saw multiple incidences of open incitement of violence and said, we don't want our company associated with that type of customer, and ended their agreement. So I think what we're going to be seeing now in the next few weeks and months is as these other extremist organizations are struggling to find, you know, other places to go hide, a lot of companies are going to be very, very hesitant to work with them, you know, even on the quiet down low, because they've been exposed. And I think people out there are going to be saying, hey, if you're going to host this type of website, we want the public to know what you are hosting. And I think we're going to see a ripple effect, for a long time, months, if not years, on something like this. And at the end of the day, this is business. It's survival of the fittest. It's evolve or die. So I think what we're seeing now with a lot more awareness of how these sites operate and the whole business behind what's needed to make them operate, you know, coming to light, I think we're going to see less and less of these extremist organizations, because at the end of the day, who's going to pay for them?
Thanks for the call. In our last couple minutes, we've had a couple callers. We don't have time for them raising the issue of Congress and their involvement on all of this. Steve, there have been calls in Congress for changes in the way we regulate these big social media companies. Is there anything on the horizon you think might happen for better or worse?
Well, let's talk again in a week. So after the inauguration, when the Democrats, you know, take control of the three parts of government, you know, a year ago, there was talk by Elizabeth Warren on breaking up some of the tech companies, specifically Facebook. So I'll be very interested to see if that gets reintroduced or brought up. However, I also don't know if the tech companies are going to get to that point. I think a lot of these tech companies were really horrified with what they saw last week, as were, you know, most of the rest of us. But I think that the tech companies are really going to be doing a lot of changes themselves to prevent something so extreme as happening again. So I think there may be a combination of, you know, some of the tech companies making some changes, but I will not be surprised if in the next year or so we see some legislation that specifically addresses some of this. You know, the big, you know, rule about, you know, what is a social media and regulating, I don't think we're going to see that recalled. I think, you know, social media companies will still be, you know, categorized as a social media platform and not a content creator. And I think that that's how it should be. But I still think there's going to be people who are going to call on that. But that opens up a whole new can of worms. And I don't think either users or the operators of social media companies want to go down that alley at all.
We'll leave it there. Steve, thanks again for joining us today.
Great. Thanks. Thanks, Rob. Appreciate it.
We've been talking to Steve Knoll, marketing professor and social media expert at Madison College. He joins us today to talk about social media companies and regulations after many big technology companies chose to temporarily or permanently block or ban the president last week. Coming up after the news, we'll look at the future of the Republican Party after President Trump's second impeachment and with the upcoming end of his time in office. And we want to hear what you think about that, especially if you are a Republican yourself. Do you want to see a role for President Trump after his time in office when it comes to GOP politics? You can get started right now with an email, ideas@WPR.org. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up tomorrow at 8 on The Morning Show, meet Wisconsin's new poet laureate and join the conversation about the value of poetry in difficult times. That's tomorrow morning at 8 here on the Ideas Network. Now, President-elect Biden will take office in 6 days. Democrats will take over control of the Senate. Yesterday, the House impeached President Trump on charges of inciting the mob that stormed the Capitol last week. So where does that leave the GOP? 10 House Republicans voted with Democrats on impeachment, and even among those who opposed the measure, many said Trump bears some responsibility, and some even said he has no future in the party. Here's South Carolina first-term Congresswoman Nancy Mace on Fox News yesterday.
And I believe that every accomplishment that Republicans and the president had, and I was a big supporter of the president over the last 4 years and worked for him on his campaign, but I believe that those accomplishments were wiped out. We had a great economy pre-COVID. We had low tax rates. We had Operation Warp Speed during the pandemic. So many enormous gains. I think that the principles and ideas that he espoused are things we're going to have to champion in the future. But without his support, his brand or his name, it's tarnished. I don't know how you defend what happened last week by any means.
You can join us at 800-642-1234. What do you see as a road ahead for the Republican Party? Should it embrace the Trump brand and the president himself, or should it cut ties with President Trump when he leaves office? If you are a Trump supporter, how do you feel about the Republican Party? If you're a Republican, how do you feel about President Trump? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. Stephanie Martin is a professor of political communication at Southern Methodist University. She focuses on conservative movements and evangelical voters. Stephanie, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Well, 1 week out from this attack on the Capitol, 1 week out from a change of presidency, what do you make of the current state of the Republican Party?
It's, you know, it feels a bit messy, to use, you know, an academic word that I like, messy. And there's big questions laid out before them right now. On the one hand, you know, do they continue with the kind of arch conservatism that started in 2008? So over the past 12 years that gave rise to the Tea Party and eventually led to Trump? Or do they return to a more traditional Republican politics that we think of when we think of people like George W. Bush or John McCain or even Mitt Romney, who a lot of people were pointing to just a week ago and saying, you know, I like him. I like what he said. I like, you know, that the way you respect voters is you tell them the truth. So, right. Which Republican Party will the real Republican Party please stand up is the moment that we're kind of in right now.
Now, we just heard a Republican congressperson there saying they'd appreciated a lot of what the president did, but we're going to have to move away from him personally in the future. But there are a lot of people in the Republican Party or maybe who have joined the Republican Party because of Donald Trump. Their loyalty may be more toward him. How big a factor is that group of people? How big is that group of people?
Well, that's why you see people like Lindsey Graham who, you know, at this point can only be called like a lover's quarrel with Donald Trump, where for sort of one day he said, I've had enough. And then almost immediately made up with Trump and traveled with him down here to Texas, you know, to attend that speech in Alamo, Texas. And a significant portion of the American electorate supports Trump and his policies. And this is the conundrum facing the incoming Biden administration. This is the conundrum facing politicians like Mitch McConnell, who, you know, waged and based a lot of their behavior in the last 4 years on this base of voters that was happening. You know, according to, I looked it up before I came on, according to 538 and whatever one thinks of polling, 42% of Americans are not on board with impeachment. Now that means 58% of Americans are on board, but only 15% of Republicans say that Trump should be removed from office. And so we keep seeing this huge amount of people in the Republican Party, Republican voters, who just stand by President Trump come hell or high water and don't seem to be willing to hold him accountable even for his worst acts as president.
In 2016, President Trump took the White House for Republicans. He won the so-called blue wall states, including here in Wisconsin, the House and Senate. Republicans kept their majority. 2018, House majority gone. 2020, White House gone along with the blue wall states. 2021 in Georgia, Senate gone now. Does that change what's going on in Republicans' minds when it comes to how they think of President Trump and what he led them to?
Well, you know, the Republican Party, in my study of them, it's very interesting what is happening to Republicans at this point, because, you know, you have to go all the way back to Herbert Hoover to find a Republican president who in one term manages to go in having the House, the Senate, and being the president. So you have all three parties that are with you. Your party holds all three. And when you leave, none of them. Right. You have to go all the way back on the Republican side to Herbert Hoover to see that happen. And so if we were operating in, you know, what social scientists like me call a fact-based world, you would say this is a terrible performance and he's not a good president. But when you look at the Republican Party and their feelings about Trump, you have a president, you have people who say this is a great president and we love what he's doing. And so that leads me to suggest or to say or to imagine that what they really like is the bombast, and they like his pugilistic style that really takes it to the opposition and shouts them down. And you've seen a lot of chatter among so-called Republican pundits, the elite pundits, and even among some of the evangelicals I study, that they find Donald Trump to be, you know, have this sort of very manly and masculine approach to the presidency that they want to sign on to. And so despite the fact that you could say that his results in terms of the power or the powerlessness that he is leaving Republicans with, the results are not good. The approach is something they really approve of.
Talking to Stephanie Martin from Southern Methodist University about the future of the Republican Party and the role President Trump, when he's ex-President Trump, will or won't play in the days and years to come. Let's go to your calls now at 800-642-1234. Jack is with us in Elk Mound. Jack, hi.
Hi. My thoughts are the Republican Party should return to the roots of fiscal conservatism. And just conservatism in general, and local control. None of those things are true in Wisconsin. None of those things are true at the federal level either. I truly think as a Republican or as a former Republican, Trump hijacked the party. And what now we're seeing what's left of it, the pieces.
Jack, thanks a lot for calling in and sharing your thoughts on that. So, Stephanie, Jack highlighting the idea that, okay, there's a Republican Party with principles and an ideology and thoughts on the role of government, and then there's Donald Trump, and they're not necessarily the same thing.
Well, you know, I'm one who always likes to look for slivers of hope and silver linings. And what Jack is pointing to, I think that was his name, right, Jack? Is that, you know, this is a deeply split party, and he's representative of that, because, you know, you have a big chunk of this Republican Party who argue that it's fine to undermine a free and fair election, right? And that they can come in and say that despite all the evidence, despite 60 lawsuits, that there was fraud in this election, even though election experts are saying there's no evidence of this fraud. But you had the reason that the election was able to still be certified last week was that you had local election officials really at you know, you had secretaries of state, including your secretary of state there in Wisconsin. You had heroic secretaries of state in Pennsylvania, heroic secretaries of state in Georgia, who refused at the local level, at the state level, who really had to stand up in almost every case to the president of the United States and say no. You know, we had a local election. Our local election was fair and free, and we are not going to throw out these votes. And so to a certain extent, you see local state governments standing up to the president of the United States and standing up to this movement. And so where it's easy to look at what's happening in the Capitol and see only despair, see perhaps some national Republican leaders behaving in ways that are gut churning. If you come back and you look at the local level, you see local Republican officials behaving better. Perhaps you'd want to see that on the Democratic side. You'd hope to see that on the Democratic side where that needs to happen. And so there are ways to see local politics working better. And maybe we can expand that out and get to that in other kinds of ways and other kinds of places.
Thanks for that call. We'll go to Chris now in Racine. Chris, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I used to be a Republican, and I think Trump took the party and made it into a cult. I don't believe it's a Republican Party at all anymore. And I think that they need to totally divorce from him. And I think that what he did last week was criminal, and I think he needs to be held accountable with a full impeachment, and which I know he was, but I think it should be upheld. And I, what I hear them Republicans saying now in the Congress is that, oh, well, we shouldn't impeach him because that will make people angry and we need to heal. And I'm going, and they'll be angry and violent. And I'm thinking, when did America become afraid of doing what is right and holding people accountable due to fear of violence? We need to stand up and not bury our heads and hope that he'll go away.
Chris, thanks a lot for that call. Stephanie, what is the equation facing Republicans as they look at impeachment, as they look at how to deal with the issues that Chris just raised?
You know, I think she is articulating something that a lot of people feel. You know, this is a no-win situation for the country. And from my vantage point, Republicans are really trying to figure out, a lot of Republicans are trying to figure out which side of history they want to be on. Because quite frankly, most presidents, their ultimate goal is to leave office with the nation better off than when they came into office. But Trump's legacy, and this is the legacy of running a sort of base-oriented presidency, his legacy appears to be cementing a more divided country where he his brand of aggressive conflict politics is the new norm. And I think that's a very dangerous place for us to be in. And my hope is that as the Republicans find themselves in a position of being a minority party across all three branches, they will ask themselves if the cost has been worth whatever trophies they see in their trophy case.
Thanks for that call. We're looking at the future of the Republican Party after President Trump leaves office next week. Stephanie Martin is with us, professor of political communication at Southern Methodist University. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts and your questions. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We're talking about the future of the Republican Party after 4 years of Donald Trump as president. He's set to leave office on Wednesday. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Stephanie Martin stays with us from Southern Methodist University. Before we go back to our caller, Stephanie, you study evangelical movements in the country. Wanted to get your thoughts on where evangelical conservative voters, mostly white evangelical voters, are now, especially thinking about Mike Pence. With his selection as running mate, it was widely seen as a nod to those evangelical voters. They were looking at Donald Trump saying, he doesn't seem real churchy, not a choir boy, but Mike Pence is our guy. Now we have Mike Pence in a bunker, basically, as Trump supporters are attacking the Capitol, while the president is still tweeting attacks on Mike Pence for not trying to overturn the election. What happens now with those conservative evangelical voters?
Well, so conservative evangelicals are their own pickle to try to figure out, because on the one hand, they really like, you know, Trump's judges, the judges he's appointed, the way that he has said the right things about abortion and about especially religious Christian freedom. But on the other hand, they deeply disapprove of his behavior and they disapprove of the way he behaves personally. So it's really tricky if you get into the polling data, because on the one hand, they see him as being good on policy, and so they approve of that and they join his, do you approve of President Trump? Yes. But like, do you like him or do you think he's a good person? No. So that's the first thing. And so what I really think is that what they like is going back to the idea that he represents a kind of patriarchal, masculine president that is willing to say the things they think, right? He says the quiet part loud. And that's what evangelicals like in him. And I suspect that what they don't like in Mike Pence, or the reason they don't rush to Mike Pence's defense, is that Mike Pence believes the right things, but he is very milquetoast in his presentation, right? So, and it's been very interesting with Mike Pence, because he was, of course, a talk radio host who said, who was more incendiary in his presentation before he became vice president. So it's really interesting the way that Mike Pence has self-presented since he became vice president.
Let's go back to our callers now. Bruce is with us in Green Bay. Bruce, hello.
Good afternoon. I am a person who normally votes Republican, but did not vote for President Trump either of the elections, but I voted against his opponent. So you can take that for what it's worth. I believe that I agree with what your guest just said, that a lot of folks believe in his, what he said policy wise, but that his rhetoric is simply abhorrent. And I think that having said that, I think it's time to move on. I don't think he should be convicted of impeachment. I think he should have been censured. That going on with this trial is going to interfere not just with the new president putting his programs in place, but is going to further divide the country. And, you know, if he's to be brought to justice, then, you know, the people who burned down Kenosha should be brought to justice as well.
Bruce, thanks for the call. We'll get more into the post-impeachment landscape coming up. But to Bruce's point, you know, he didn't vote for Trump, but he did vote against Donald Trump's opponents. Do you think there's a significant number, Stephanie, of people who still ended up checking Donald Trump's name, even though they didn't love him, just because they liked the Democratic candidate even less?
Yeah. So to me, so social scientists would say that's a distinction without a difference, right? So if you fill in a circle for Trump, then you voted for Trump, right? If he's saying that he voted for a third party, which I wasn't quite sure what he meant.
That's
then,
true. That's a possibility. Then
that's a different story. What I would say is that what we haven't talked about is that there's a phenomenon in American politics right now called negative partisanship. And negative partisanship is really important to understand if you want to understand the American political landscape. And what it means is that many of us are in a situation now where we don't really identify anymore with a political party. We say like we say sort of like the last caller. I don't like the Republicans. Trump doesn't represent me anymore. And therefore, I don't really identify as a Republican because this isn't me. But you know who I really hate? The Democrats, right? Or I don't really identify with the Democrats because, you know, look, AOC, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, this, you know, she is so far left and that's where the Democrats want to go. So I'm not really a Democrat anymore. But, you know, what I really don't want? I don't want the Republicans to have power. And when that happens, when you really just can't stand the other side, that really works against compromise. It's like two parents who have a very acrimonious divorce. And so you don't, it's not that you don't want your kids to love the other parent, but when it turns out that they love you more, it makes you really happy, right? And so that's kind of where the situation that we're in right now with Republicans and Democrats, where we just really don't mind that the two parties don't work together, and that makes it tough to get anything done.
Thanks for that call. We'll go to Mike now in Verona. Mike, hi.
Hi. Okay, so I can totally agree with what you're just saying, but I am also I identify as a Democrat, and you know, I this is just an example. You know, I've heard a number of callers call in who are identifying themselves as Republicans and pretending like you know, this thing that is happening with Trump is totally outside of the Republicans elected him. They voted for him, and this isn't something that happened 4 years ago. This is something that started 20 years ago here in Wisconsin. It was Scott Walker. You know, it was the movement away from being inclusive, being accepting of other people, being a shared country, and moving toward being I'm getting what I can get when I can get it.
I gotcha. Mike, I'm going to jump in because we don't have much time left. But Stephanie, Donald Trump as a culmination of changes in the Republican Party, not an aberration, not something outside the thread of the Republican Party. What do you think?
Yeah, there's a school of political science that says that politics come in cycles, that there was the Roosevelt cycle, FDR cycle that lasted until Reagan, that we've been in the Reagan cycle, and that the Reagan cycle may be wrapping up with Trump, and we are entering into a new political era that we will see what happens next. So this is actually a great time to watch politics if you're interested.
All right. Thanks a lot for that call. Stephanie, very briefly, what are you watching for over the next week with this transition?
You know, Joe Biden really wants to get his agenda back into the news cycle. We have a new president who's taking office and no one is paying attention. And so, you know what? Donald Trump has been great for the last 4 years, 5 years, at sucking up all the media oxygen in the room. And it's not a great news cycle right now, but Donald Trump still has all our attention. And I bet you Joe Biden just really wants us to pay attention to his plan to end the pandemic. So I'm watching to see if he manages to do that and get us to notice that he's about to be the president.
Stephanie, thanks a lot for joining us today.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Stephanie Martin is a professor of political communication at Southern Methodist University. We talked to her about the future of the Republican Party in the post-Trump era. Coming up tomorrow on Central Time, COVID-19 has been overshadowed in the news by political developments, but the last week has seen the highest U.S. death toll since the pandemic started. We'll get the latest news plus info about a new mutation of the virus and, of course, the vaccine rollout. Plus, it's this week's edition of Food Friday. Cooking is an art and a science. A scientist turned cook gives us the flavor equation. That's tomorrow on Central Time. Here's a story. A treasure hunter with a metal detector in California found a lost wedding ring that had been dropped in 1993. That's a report from the UPI. Apparently, the husband and a couple dropped the ring in a game of catch, only just got it back thanks to some detective work from some guy with a metal detector. We've all been there losing stuff, including producer Laura Pavin. Laura, hi.
Hey, Rob.
All right, now you, I understand, have a lost ring story of your own.
I do, and it perplexes me to this day still. So I don't usually like wearing jewelry at all. So I would like wear my wedding ring during the day, but then I would take it off at night and like put it in my purse. And so I was walking to work one day with my purse, got to work, looked in my bag, wedding ring not there. I have retraced my steps. I've looked in gutters. I've looked at every inch of my apartment. No dice.
Have you got out the metal detector like this guy in California?
No, but I'm seriously considering purchasing one because, I don't know, it could very well be in the bay.
You know, this one turned up after 27 years, so if you just wait long enough, you could get that ring back. Laura,
okay,
thanks a lot.
Thanks, Rob.
Lost rings, this is Central Time here on the Ideas Network.
Live from NPR News, I'm Jack Spear. With less than a week before Inauguration Day, President-elect Joe Biden is set to lay out his initial plans to combat the coronavirus in a primetime